Welcome again to another fantastic, exciting, and action-packed episode of Building the Game. My name is Rob. With me, as always, is my good friend Jason.
Hey.
And we're also joined today here at Gen Con. This is our first episode recorded here at Gen Con. Joined here today, we are by Michael Keller and Max Michael. Michael Keller is with Visible Hand Games, and Max Michael is with Stratamax Games. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Welcome. How are you today?
Just got in, so preparing for con fatigue to set in a couple days.
Yeah, it always
getting,
does.
Getting ready to conserve energy right now.
Yeah.
Ready for the inevitable storm to hit tomorrow.
Yeah. And Max, you've been here one day already or a couple days
already? Yeah, I've been here all day today. I already have con fatigue.
Max has been setting up for Valley Games today,
right,
is that correct?
I'm setting up Valley Games booth and running that for him. Save him a trip from Canada.
Yeah.
We licensed our game days of Steam to them, so we help each other out.
Right on.
And
cool.
I think the heat in the convention center would have killed the Canadians anyway.
for sure.
I'm sure they would have not been dressed appropriately.
It's hot here, eh?
Yeah. It is hot, though. Yeah, I was in there to pick up my my badge at Will Call. I mean, first of all, the Will Call line was huge. Holy cow. Bigger than I've ever seen it on a Wednesday.
Although, I noticed this last year. For some reason, the Will Call is 10 times as long as just registration.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So if you don't register in time to get your badge mailed to you, don't bother.
Yeah,
he's
right.
Got a point. It's like $5 more to not have to stand in that line.
Was it that cheap?
It's not much. Maybe $10 different. It's not much.
Oh, I didn't realize
to
that.
Not stand
this
in
could
that
be
line.
Like
yeah.
This could be like where I just say stuff and I'm wrong too.
Yeah, you do it a lot. Yeah, I mean that said, it was a long line, but I was only in the line I think for about 30 minutes, so it moved pretty quick. Yeah, but Max, tell us again what game you have here this weekend.
Well, this weekend at the Valley Games booth, we've got all the Valley Games D-Day Dice stuff and all their expansions, and that's all really cool. And,
okay.
And can't wait to get my hands on some of that stuff and see how that all works. It looks great. And then also, we have Let's Take a Hike, our game that we, Stratamax Games, released at Essen last year.
Okay.
And then I've got a pre-production model of Sheepdogs of Pendleton Hill, a sheepdogs and sheep herding game that we'll be releasing at Essen this year as well.
Cool.
Excellent.
That's great.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. And Michael, what do you have for us?
I'll be primarily demoing City Hall, a game of mine that will be hitting crowdfunding this fall.
Oh, awesome. Cool.
I've also got with me Captains of Industry,
okay,
which is a game that will be published by Tasty Minstrel sometime next year.
Excellent. It's very exciting. So you're just doing demos on site right now?
For City Hall, yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay.
Very
cool. Yeah, now I read something about that on the Unpub list, and it's you're building a city? Is that...
Yes. So it started with my attempt to figure out how to turn SimCity into a multiplayer board game.
Like this guy already.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm sure lots of designers have tried to do that. And my approach, it actually ends up the city building is just an excuse for the main part of the game, which is where players trade political influence with each other.
Okay.
In an attempt to control various offices within City Hall to mold the city to their benefit.
Okay, cool. So it's dealing with the politics, but you're also building the city at the same time.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Is that cards? Is that tiles? So what kind of mechanics do you have in that?
So it's there's a map of the city, and
okay,
you're going to be buying land and then building tiles of different types.
Okay.
On it, while also campaigning for your own approval, because at the end of the game, your votes are going to be determined both by your approval and the number of people you've managed to attract into the city with the neighborhoods you've built.
Okay.
Nice.
Cool. That sounds great.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. It's a bit different. And I always laugh with Rob because, well, Rob laughs at me, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I always say one of my biggest influences is those, like the cheesy building games, like you would see, like video game style, like
mm-hmm.
SimCity or something like that. Like, I like the idea of trying to capture that idea of, from, you know, that kind of that feeling from
mm-hmm.
those games and turning it into something that's not. You know, one of the games we talked about before, the idea was trying to capture the sandbox idea from a
yeah.
video game and put that into a board game.
Yeah.
So
that can be a real challenge.
And I think the key is you have to find something unique, so a
right.
twist to it. You can't
yeah.
just try to do a straight out translation.
Right.
Like one of the most successful video game to board game translations, in my opinion, was Age of Empires 3.
Okay.
Which is now under some different name, but if you played the computer game and you played the board game and you didn't know the title of the board game, you'd have no idea they were related at all.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And yet it was a great game. It dealt with the same themes as the video game, but it had its own, it made sure its mechanics were driven by the needs of a board game.
Okay.
Excellent.
Right on.
So,
you know, that reminds me of the Civilization board game, because I'm a Civ nut on the computer, but my wife and I bought the Civilization board game like for Christmas last year, mm-hmm. and we sat down and tried to play it once, and I think after about 4 hours, we were three turns in and completely confused, completely lost, and it was really discouraging, and I'm sure it's a great game, but it was just the barrier to entry was so high, and it was just so. It almost felt like they were trying to emulate the video game mechanics too closely.
What's funny about that is this is the second time they've tried to take Sid Meier's Civilization computer game and make it into a board game.
Oh, really?
I don't know, five to 10 years ago, they released a game called Sid Meier's Civilization 3, same time as the computer game Civ 3. And that actually tried, in my opinion, that tried to mirror the computer game even more closely.
Really?
And it was unplayable.
Yeah, I
would think so.
I
like video games. I like board games, and I think the best you can do would be to put players in the same spot and have them make the same kinds of decisions.
Right.
Yeah.
And after that, I think you're just going to diverge.
Well, and I think if you try and focus on one or two mechanics that you really like you know, for your idea for City Hall based on SimCity, you know, the building, we're going to build, right? But then you add in the political influence and stuff because you want to make it its own thing.
Right.
If you were to make a straight copy of it, yeah, then why not just play the video game?
And right, and yeah. what's key I think with what I did with City Hall was that it started with SimCity's idea of buildings caring which buildings are next to each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
But then that became just the background for the heart of my game, which is the political influence trading.
Gotcha. Right.
So I think if you're going to try to do a translation or something inspired by a video game, you have to keep in mind that whatever the theme is, have that as your background. Have that as the justification for a solid board game mechanic.
Because you're going to have to do something different. Because you're not going to have a computer to crunch numbers. You're not going to have
exactly.
pretty graphics. You're not going to have a
well,
a
then you know
do those things. But you sit with the same cause and effect. The cause and effect you liked was, I put these buildings next to each other. What's the effect? And so you stuck right to that, and then off you went. So you mined that bit out of the video game. It's like how do you make a board game out of that? Instead of trying to make a video game into a board game, you took that cause and effect out and made a board game out of that. And I think that's the jump that you made. From me on the outside looking in, I'm sure that you did.
That definitely is what it
sounds
like. Yeah,
that's a great approach. Yeah. Now, Max, you were telling me a little bit earlier about Sheepdogs. Sheepdogs?
Sheepdogs of Pendleton Hill.
Pendleton Hill. Well, tell us about that.
Well, Sheepdogs is each player's a sheepdog, and you've got your shepherds that you put up on the hill, and then you're going to put sheep in the pens. And the flocks are going to be made up of your sheep and other players' sheep as well. And throughout the game, you'll be moving the flocks around. And you're going to be moving flocks that have your sheep in them and other players' sheep in them as well. And you're going to be moving flocks that have none of your sheep in them at all. Because it's card-driven. There's cards that require you to take an action in anybody's color, including your own, or take two actions. They have to involve your color, so you can move a flock two spaces if your sheep are in it both times.
Okay.
Or you can just do two actions for yourself, a couple of sheep on the board or a shepherd on the board. And the 1+1 card is the one that's tricky to use. One action only for your color and one action only for different colors. So you'll be doing stuff for or to other players, depending on how you play.
Yeah.
You've got very few actions, very, very tough choices, and we like to call it the fluffy game with bite.
That's catchy.
We talked about that, too, with some games where, you look at a game and you're like, oh, sheepdogs, that's fun, that's cool. And then like the strategy kind of sneaks up on you, you know. You don't, when you, the game feels very approachable, you know, because you know, everybody likes sheepdogs, especially like, you know, that's a game where you get a girl gamer right in there. Yeah. I like sheepdogs.
Well, even with the lavender shepherds, where you're like, oh, exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the player colors is this nice light lavender. It's like,
right,
oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as they play it, the strategy kind of sneaks in. I talked in the last episode, one of our episodes, about Scavengers.
Scavengers, yeah.
By John Werner, I think.
Something like that.
Zombie State Games.
Yeah, Zombie State Games.
And Game Salute as well. That's a game where it's like, you're at a campsite and there's animals and you're trying to...
Oh, that's cute.
But like, once you start to play it, there's like mad crazy strategy in that game, you know? Yeah. And, you know, we talk a lot about approachability and how, you know, that's so important.
Yeah.
And a game like that sounds like it has great approachability.
Well, we hope so. You're either putting a shepherd on the board, or you're putting a sheep on the board, or you're moving a flock, and then, mm-hmm. or you're moving the wolf, and that's about all you can do in the whole game. And it's a matter of using those actions in the best way. And when do you use that, you know, the rainbow sheep, any color you want to move, when do you use that to move somebody's flock in a different spot, or when do you use it just for your own...
Right,
you're all good. So this, so very easy to teach, but tough decision points is kind of what we want to go on. And in that way, it's a bit like our Tammany Hall title, where you either put two ward bosses on the board or one ward boss and an immigrant, and that's your only choice for your whole turn. You know, either do two of this or one of this and one of that. But you'll sit there and scratch your head a bit over what seems like a real sort of binary choice.
Sure.
So yeah. I think it's easy to get into, and then you go, oh, that's how you do that.
That's the kind of stuff that gets us excited. Something that's really approachable, really easy to pick up and get started with, and then the challenge and the strategy comes in as you learn the game. Yeah. One thing that we like to talk about a lot on our show here is mechanics. Every week we have a segment we call Mechanic of the Week, where we pick a specific game mechanic and we try and talk about what we like about it, what we don't like about it, what games we've played that feature that mechanic and how well it works and different ways to approach it. So do you guys have any favorite mechanics that you'd like to highlight?
Michael? Well, my favorite type of mechanic is anywhere it's up to the players to determine the value of something. Now, usually this takes place in the form of an auction, and I know there's a perception that auctions are considered a bit of a crutch.
Max is saying he doesn't like auctions.
Right. You know, auctions are what you use when you don't know how to balance your game. But
nice. Auctions are why I lose games, because I don't know how much anything's worth.
But you know, you can have that without an auction, right? I mean...
Right, but it depends on how you're using this type of mechanic in terms of letting the players decide the value of things. Whether you're using it as a balancing force or if it's the drive of your game. So, you know, to bring it back to City Hall, at any given point, you have to decide how much political influence is worth each an action is worth in a given round. How important is it to you that you get to buy land this round? So how much influence are you willing to bid try to capture that? And then your opponent has to decide if they're willing to accept that bid or if it's more important to them than that.
Right.
So I think as long as you're not using it as a balancing mechanism, you're instead using player-driven valuation as the actual core interaction.
Right.
Then it's a positive thing.
Yeah. Okay. And I'll temper my remarks a little bit. That type of auction where it's bidding for who goes first, bidding for who does what first, bidding for who chooses what tiles available first, those kind of auctions where you're going to bid on several things that are going to happen that turn, those are interesting. What's not interesting is here's a tile on auction, everybody bid on it. And that becomes very much, has somebody played the game 900 times and knows exactly how much that tile is worth.
For my other game, Captains of Industry, during the game you're producing various commodities. However, when you produce something, you don't get to hold on to it. You must immediately place it on the open market where other players have the opportunity to buy it from you, depending on at whatever price you selected. So in that case, again, you're having to put a value on something, but this time a value on something you're selling. right. instead of something you're trying to acquire. And one of my favorite things is at a convention last year, I had one playtest where the average value of goods was extremely low, hovering in the, you know, towards the low end of the available player choices.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the players remarked to me that he thought, oh, prices are always going to be this low. I think the game's broken. The very next test, in the middle of the game, I brought him over and he saw the players had collectively decided everything should be at the upper end of the spectrum.
Okay.
So there is no right answer versus where in some thing just comes up for auction, there probably is a pretty good right answer.
Gotcha.
But if there's no right answer and it really is up to the players to determine the value of things, I think that's one of my favorite mechanics.
Okay, right on. Well, real quick before we move on to another one. Now, I'm struggling to think of any other games that I've played that have an auction mechanic in them. Is there anything that I would have heard of?
Well,
anything big, you know, anything more well-known, I should say.
Probably the most well-known purist auction game would be Modern Art.
Okay, I've heard of that. I haven't played it.
And the interesting thing about Modern Art is you're auctioning off pieces of art.
Okay.
But each piece of art has an icon on it that says what auction type it is. So there are lots of different auction types. Once around to general, like a once around bid, a go around until everyone drops out bid, a Dutch, I think a Dutch auction, or a name your price.
Okay.
Like, so Modern Art is the prototypical example of an auction game. Ra is also very popular.
Okay.
The way Ra works, its tiles get flipped,
mm-hmm.
right? But you flip them one at a time until someone decides, okay, I want to bid on this set.
I want to have an auction now.
Right.
Oh, okay. So,
I hate Raw because I always lose.
Again, because you don't know how to put value.
I'm waiting for the Raw to come up, and I'm like, you know, and somebody calls for an auction. It's like, but I don't want any of those things, and you do, and this, okay. And so, you know, in a Raw, they're finally done, and I'm like, want this whole line of Raw things to come up, and Raw comes up like a dime. I'm like, okay, this is good.
So if you are looking to
yeah.
dip into the auction genre, Modern Art and Raw.
No.
Okay.
Both the same designer, interesting.
Auctions where the whole game is an auction. This is where I don't make any sense sometimes and contradict myself. Where the whole game is an auction, like for sale,
mm-hmm.
is great, you know, and Modern Art's a bit that way. But when you've got this huge, hours-long, complicated thing happening.
Yeah.
And in order to make it run, you have an auction for different pieces that you place into this hour-long thing you're building, and everybody knows the value of that thing. That's
right.
where you lose me.
Have you played Nefertiti?
I have not.
That game is a game where it's just continuous. The whole game is auctions, but there's, I think, 7 auctions going on simultaneously all the time.
Okay.
Like, and players are just going around bidding on various things, and when something, you know, no one's increased the bid for a full round, it resolves, it gets rewarded, and then a new thing is placed in that auction block.
Oh, okay.
And so that's...
Well, that'd be interesting.
If you don't like auction games, don't play that one. Seven times as much.
Yeah.
but the whole thing's just an auction, and that's it. And
yeah.
it's not, the auction is the key thing
mm-hmm.
that makes this 3-hour experience happen.
Right.
And that's like for the 3 hours of other hard work that you've done, and there's an auction that you have to have this little thing to make your whole engine work that you've been building, and everybody else knows how much that is worth, and you overpay,
mm-hmm.
and then you're done, and you
yeah.
don't know it yet for 2 hours. That. That's
right,
that piece
yeah.
of auction where the auction piece is so important to the
yeah.
other big thing you're doing, and where prior knowledge is so important to
yeah.
know exactly what's that worth. That leaves me cold.
Sure.
Yeah, and that makes sense why that.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Doesn't sound as cool.
Yeah.
What is interesting to me about the idea of the player valuation is so many games where you have to trade commodities. Like an easy one is Settlers, right? I
yeah.
try and mention Settlers all the time.
Yeah.
Everyone's played Settlers mostly, right?
Right?
You guys played Settlers,
yeah.
So you know, everyone's got the same goal, score 10 points, but there's so many options to do that, you know, and or might be really value, I might value that very high, you might value that very low, so I might be willing to give you a lot to get one ore, you know, whereas, you know what I mean? So that, I agree with you, I think that when you force the players to do that, it it helps the strategy get higher, you know, right? Because you don't necessarily know what the other players have, but it's not an auction mechanic. So, you know. Mm-hmm. There's another game I've played before that I've talked about, Lawless. That's made by, I think, Blue Games? I think it's Descartes and Blue Games is who distributes it. But they have a mechanic. Stone Age has the same mechanic, or one very like it, where you've got point values on cards to purchase them, and then whenever you buy one, all the cards slide.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's cool, because that's a neat way to do an auction type thing without having, you know, the player determines the value. Is that worth 6 of my points to buy,
yeah,
or is it not? You know, so that
players determining the value. The auction games I like, but when there's an intrinsic value based on the
there's already a value
of the game. There's already a value, and people have played 100 times know that value.
That's
not so much fun.
Right. Yeah. That's well, and then you lose some of your approachability. Right.
I mean, for me to do.
Right.
So I'm not approaching that anymore.
Right. I mean, it's never fun for anyone to play a game to be able to step into a game that somebody's played 100 times and you've played once, and you're just going to get slaughtered every time because you'll never understand the game as well as they do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, I'll give a game 2-3 tries. Right.
Right.
But 50 tries to learn the math down to the decimal point?
Yeah.
That's not for me.
It is for
some people.
So, yeah,
and
right.
That's great.
Yep.
But
there are people that like that. And good for them, right?
Good for them.
Yeah. Cool. Well, Max, how about favorite mechanic of yours?
I like a genre mechanics. I like situations where you and I, for a short period of time, have a common goal. But that's going to be a short period of time.
Okay.
And one of us will end that partnership sooner rather than later, more than likely.
Okay.
And so I like that situation.
Yeah.
And how you get there, what mechanic gets you there is the tricky bit, because it's a timing issue. If it goes on too long, then the game's broken, because now we've got you and I are teaming up and we're sweeping all before us.
Yeah.
Because it's two against one, or two against two ones that won't team up for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So that doesn't work. But if it's too short, it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
So how do you get that timing right?
Okay.
And so those sort of temporary alliances is what I like to see in games.
Okay. Can you think of anything that does that really well?
Well, Sheepdogs is going to do that wonderfully.
Okay. Well, of course. I'm sure.
Fantastic.
Well, it makes sense that you like
that
mechanic.
Perfect.
That's why you're getting that.
That's genius. But Tammany Hall by Doug Eckhart, that was one of our titles, and now been licensed to Pandasaurus, does that as well.
Okay.
As far as, you know, he's the mayor. I won't vote against you in this ward. You don't vote against me in this ward.
Okay.
You take him on in that ward. I'll take him on in this ward. That kind of thing. But as soon as the election's over, it's like, who are you again?
Yeah.
Never heard of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So those kinds of opportunities to sort of make for a joint venture.
Yeah. Where a competitive game becomes suddenly co-op for just a little bit.
Co-op for just a little bit, between a few people. But it can't stay,
Right. And what's cool about that is you've got that sense of camaraderie, like, okay, Rob, listen, this is what we're doing. But you know the whole time, Rob's just going to screw you in the end, right? Because as soon as you guys are done, right?
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. Have you, I'm interested to hear what you think of Diplomacy.
Diplomacy is too long for my taste.
Okay.
I'm old. I can't play things that take more than a couple hours, because I just won't get enough games in before I croak. But I want to play more than 5 games before I die. But it is, I think there's one big backstab that every player gets in Diplomacy, and I think probably people get eliminated from the game very early and don't realize it, or do and still stick it out. And it's certainly a classic, in my opinion. It's kind of showing its age. And it is, for my taste, it's too long. And you get out too soon. And you get one stab, and then you're kind of done. So I'd rather have, death by a thousand cuts all along, and everybody kind of still in it. I really like kind of I gotcha right here, but I don't want it to be fatal. And I think in Diplomacy it's fatal. Once somebody lies to you and you trusted them, you did what they said, boom, they don't come through, then I think you're that one turn behind, and I don't know if you can catch up.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with Diplomacy. I haven't played that. It's a
classic. It's older than you.
Yeah.
It was innovative as could be. I mean, you know, it's just, it was the Commodore 64 of its day, but it's, you know, and it was...
Now it's still the Commodore 64.
It was breathtaking. It was cutting edge. It was fantastic. It's genius to have come from thin air to get it done. And it's an all-day game, and I don't know where it fits.
It's worth playing at least once. Okay. And I think a convention is actually a decent place if you, you know, not that I expect you to have much time at Gen Con, but maybe at a regional convention or something.
Yeah.
If you get a chance to play it, I really would recommend it. I've played it in person a couple times myself. I've also played quite a bit online.
Oh, okay.
Online it works much, much better.
Sure.
Because you can take your time. A game will last months, so there's no rush.
Wow. Wow.
There was that dude that played that Civ game for like 20 years or
something like that.
10 years.
Civ 2 or something
like
that, yeah.
Yeah, Civ 2 for a decade, and in the end everyone just nuked each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a good use of time. That's, you know, that's not entertaining in my book. Yeah.
Well, Civ.
Yeah, Civ. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, no, I'm with you though. I don't generally play games that take a really long time. Because,
nope.
I mean, and Jason and I have talked about this before. I mean, I primarily play games with my wife, you know, because... apart from Jason and his wife, I don't have a whole lot of friends who are board gamers.
You don't have a lot of friends.
I mean, we have friends, but they're into video games, you know, and they're into going out to the bar and stuff. So if I'm playing a game, it's usually just me sitting down with my wife, and, you know, we're doing that with a bottle of wine, and we're going to listen to some records and play a game for an hour or two, and then we want to be done, you know?
Yeah.
Because then we've had a bottle of wine, and it's time for bed.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I
just wonder why you're bothering with a game, but I'm just...
But, you know, it is, I just don't have the attention, you know.
For a long game.
Red,
like
shiny.
What I will say that I don't like, though, is, and I'm trying to be really careful about this, because a couple of my ideas are building games. You want to build up, like, Munchkin is a good example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Munchkin, like, if you play a game that ends quickly, because, you know, like, Munchkin games either seem to end, if you're playing with people who don't play very often, the games will end very quickly. And someone will win because no one knows how to stop them. If you're playing with a group of people that knows how to play Munchkin, the game will never end, right? Because every time Rob's about to win, we're all going to screw Rob and stop him from winning. And then, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, what I hate is those games where you like Munchkin, I start to get cool stuff and I'm like, yeah! And then game's over. And it's just kind of like, oh, well, I was just building up. So I got why a lot of those games, like Civilizations, are long-term games.
Right.
They take
forever.
But I just don't have the attention. So it's like I like the concept, but I'd like a mid-range game. Like if I could play an hour and a half game where I get to build a bunch of stuff, I would much rather that than a 15 to 30 minute game, or even a 45 minute game, or a 4-hour game. Where at the end, I'm just like, I hate this game.
Yeah.
So.
This might be at the upper end of your spectrum, but you might want to play Le Havre.
Okay.
The reason being that you're building up your engine, your economic engine, to produce various goods and sell them. But what everyone says is the game always ends one turn too early. It ends right before you just get everything together, and that's a great tension.
That is. You just want
to play it again, don't you?
Yeah.
P.T. Barnum, always leave them wanting more.
Yeah.
A lot of times when we've played Settlers, it's like that. Like, somebody wins, and it's like, I was going to win on my turn, like in the prison before you wins.
Okay, so guys, moving on for a moment here. Let's hear, what are you interested in seeing this year? What has you excited about Gen Con 2012? Well, what are you looking forward to here?
I want to see Catwoman.
Okay,
and I can say that because my wife will never listen to this.
Neither will ours.
True story.
I'm down with that. Sure. Okay, I support that.
No, you always want to see what's new, and you want to see if there's any method to the madness. Is there a trend? Is there not? Is there, you know, is there something afoot? Is there a wave of some kind of new style of game? You know, is it cards? Is it board games? Is it miniatures? Is there, you know, is there some kind of current Or is it all just bright spots that, that you can't connect the dots to? Mm-hmm. So that's, it's always kind of fun to see if there's a trend or just random dots out there.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of view, because like the whole deck building phenomenon kind of hit in the last couple of years. And then there's just massive numbers of deck building. And then there's that Quarriors game with the build your dice bag. And
dice building.
And everyone thought that was the next thing, and then it just didn't happen.
Yeah, nothing happened, yeah. Yeah, and I like Quarriors. I mean, I picked up a copy last year, and it's fun, but it's, you know, it just didn't take off. But yeah.
I would have to imagine that that price point wise is a pain in the butt to price a game like that, because
it was expensive, I think.
I mean,
yeah.
A deck building, cards. Cards
right.
are very cheap.
Right.
Dice. Custom-made dice, like they had.
Yeah.
Even buying in bulk, those are going to be, you know
right.
what I mean, more expensive than cards, that's
right.
for sure.
Yeah, plus they package that in a tin, which is not cheap.
Yeah.
Well, they probably figured they got all those dice, they might as well go for broke.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how relieved I was that that didn't
yeah.
become the next wave, because my least favorite mechanic is dice.
Oh, is it really? Rolling dice?
So when I saw Quarriors coming out, I was, please don't let this be every game for the next year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But no, I didn't see a single game like that on the list
no,
this year.
No, me neither. Me neither.
So
I probably because of the expense, because it's so much to get all those dice put together.
Yeah, it's just not cost effective. So,
yeah.
But D-Day dice for Valley Games.
Oh,
right.
Point. It's going great. And
is it great?
But there's not millions of dice in
yeah.
it.
Right.
Yeah.
That helps.
Yeah. And it's a board. It's not just dice. It's
yeah.
it's a board that you move along and you choose how you want to use your dice. I mean, you're going to roll a lot of dice. Well, not a lot. You're going to roll some dice and you're going to choose which ones you're going to use. So that type of dice game I like.
Oh,
I
yeah.
don't like where, you know, you're rolling for sixes and that's the only thing good
yeah.
for you. You
yeah.
know? But I like where you're rolling and there's two good things here I can choose from in the die roll,
mm-hmm.
or there's four kind of average things
right.
I can choose from in a set. So which
mm-hmm.
which one do I want to choose? I like that decision point.
Sure.
And it and you know, having ADD, I like how the dice limit your choices down from 50 things you can do on your turn to two or three.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
pick one. So I like how it forces that decision point.
Yeah.
But where the dice make the decision for you, you know, I don't like that.
Right.
But
yeah.
when they give you a choice to make and limit your choices,
mm-hmm.
I don't mind that at all. Credit Mobilier is like that will be coming out from Rio Grande here soon, I hope.
Okay.
Where you roll the dice and the dice are the different colors of the companies. Which company do you want to take actions in? Well, you're really invested in the Red Railroad Company. But you only rolled one red, and you rolled three yellows. You know, so do you take that then to, you know,
mm-hmm.
or bolster your position in yellow? So you've got that decision point there. So
yeah.
so dice doing that, I don't mind. What I don't like is I'm rolling the dice, and there's only one result that's any good to me.
Yeah, that's to the game's playing itself, and that's no fun.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it's just like a standard like roll and move game. You might as well play Candyland or Chutes and Ladders, right?
Yeah.
Mean,
yeah.
If the dice make all the decisions, to me, that doesn't even feel like a game. I know technically that is a game, but
it's an activity.
Is anything?
Yeah, it's an activity.
Yeah.
Now I will constantly put myself in a position where, one roll is about all that's useful to me.
Yeah,
right.
But good players will put themselves in a position where
right.
you know, two or three different things can happen, and they can still improve their position.
I mean, yeah, and that's different than that's the difference between Monopoly and Chutes and Ladders,
right?
right?
Yeah.
I mean, you just roll and move your guy around the board, but the decisions you've made based on earlier turns helps, you know,
mm-hmm.
helps or hurts you. Whereas if you look at a game like, you know, Chutes and Ladders, you roll the dice, and if you got screwed, it's because you rolled two, and that puts you on the slot for it. So
yeah.
or the shoot, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a definite difference between that of rolling for options and rolling for that's all you can do.
Yeah.
Is that where dice break for you, Michael, or?
The roll for results,
yeah.
that's what kills me. I find, you know, I would be more likely to play Alien Frontiers than something where the dice determine the outcome.
Yeah. I hate multiple rolls to get to the result. And,
mm-hmm.
and as much as I love, and I'll, what do I want to see at the show? I'll go look at all the miniature stuff because it's gorgeous. They've
yeah.
got the
oh,
huge
sure.
layouts.
Yeah.
And And then you just watch him play, and it's like, you know, okay, you're 6 inches away, you roll, you know, three dice, you know, you roll 30 dice, you know, then you pick up half of those and roll again.
Yeah.
And you know, so you got a hit, now roll for effect. Okay, did you get penetration? Did you get a critical hit? Did you get this? Oh, come on already, take your tank off the board.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
Yeah.
This is taking longer than a real war.
I used to play a lot of Battletech when I was younger, yeah. and I got to a point where I was like, well, I'm not even, what am I doing here? You know, yeah. It one guy's turn is going to take 25 minutes,
right.
And then the next guy goes, and that's just, you know, 2 seconds of battle time. I don't want to stand here at this table for 8 hours.
They're beautiful. They're
gorgeous to look at. Yeah, but yeah.
And I can see why people get into it.
Oh,
it's
sure.
Just, yeah, it wouldn't be my thing either.
Yeah.
So I liked when it came to the miniature stuff. I liked where like the D&D miniatures or the Dreamblade stuff, where like you roll dice, but like that doesn't determine everything. You have a move, you make it, and then you roll dice to try and do something. You know. So mm-hmm. And you don't even roll dice for everything in those games.
Yeah.
There's some effects that just. Card says I can do this, so I can do this. But it's not roll. Now see where I hit. Now see how much damage I did. Now see...
Yeah. Now, I mean, that's it. I mean, I like dice. I have a whole lot of dice at home. You know,
lots of dice.
I mean, you know, I like a little bit of unknown, a little bit of unpredictability and that kind of stuff.
We talked about that before.
We talked
about perfect information games. You know, and how we both agreed that that's a cool mechanic, but...
In moderation.
Sometimes randomness equals right. fun.
Well, our logo is a colored dice.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, our original designs, our first designs were all driven by the decisions made
mm-hmm.
on what the dice pulled up, you know. But okay. You always had decisions to make with those dice. What do I want to do with this purple dice?
Yeah.
What do I do with this red
sure.
dice?
Yeah.
Do I want to put it here? Do I want to put it there?
Yeah.
And it'll do different things if I put it in different places.
Yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. So that's, then it becomes a resource allocation game.
Right.
And you
mm-hmm.
just
yep.
don't know what resources are coming up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. No, that's cool.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
But like roll for effect is, yeah, that's not loads of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when there's no choices after that roll.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael, what are you looking forward to?
Two things. First, so over the past few months, I've been on Twitter and managed to meet with a bunch of... co-follow a bunch of other game designers,
mm-hmm.
and this convention will be my first chance to meet some of them. So I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, yeah, us too. We're
yep.
totally pumped about that. Yeah.
It's always fun talking shop with another designer.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And the second thing is the thing I don't know will be great yet.
Yeah.
Last year, it was Star Trek Fleet Captains.
Okay.
And I say this knowing that it uses the die as roll for result. And so, and despite
nothing
that, and despite
hypocrites.
Despite the production flaws that people have talked about and
uh-huh.
the fiddly rules, that game just grabbed me so thoroughly. It was
yeah.
my top game last year,
right.
by far. Nothing even came close. So I'm looking to be surprised by another game this year that can just displace everything else on my to play list.
And the good thing is that happens pretty much every year, doesn't it? You know, where you find a game and you're like, whoa, this is just
mm-hmm.
awesome, you know?
Yeah, for me last year was Sentinels of the Multiverse. That was the one I was just like, oh, holy cow, I dig this. I dig this game. Yeah.
And you bought it and you play it all the time, and
yeah.
I felt the same way, and I bought it and I still haven't played it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm with you on that. Look, so the one thing that you weren't expecting to see at all that just, yeah.
Yeah. And that thing's going to be D-Day dice for you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're definitely going to have a demo now. Yeah, right on.
I'll want to bet dinner on that.
Well, that's
I'm not sure it would be an objective.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. That's great. Let's see. What else do we have here?
I'm bad.
What do you guys want to do this con?
Oh, us? Well, we did a whole episode about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. But, you know, getting
yeah.
here...
And you're hoping your wives don't listen to it, right?
Yeah.
You know, now that we're here, I'll tell you one of the things I'm most excited about,
yeah.
like you said, is talking to other game
mm-hmm.
designers. You know, that's... We've spent years talking to... Like, one of the things I love about Gen Con and other conventions, but especially Gen Con, is it's so easy to go to a booth, see a game, and then... demo with the creator of the game, you know, the designer sits down with you and demos it, and that's awesome, you know.
Yeah.
And then when you get done, you know, that you buy the game from the designer and the designer signs the game, and that's so cool. As a player, And now we get to experience that this year as people who also want to be game designers, you know, and who have working prototypes of a game and or games. And that's cool. You know, that so that I'm that's different for me this year. And
yeah,
I'm very excited about that. And I'm even more geeked after talking to you guys.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely.
Be excited about that. But my recommendation is also tamp down your expectations. I say this as someone with 8 years of failure behind me at this point.
Okay.
Just, you know, I haven't seen your games. I'm not going to pass judgment.
No, yeah.
But it's tough. It's tough getting feedback the first few times.
Okay.
But you don't have 8 years of failure behind you.
Well, I don't have a box with the name yet, so.
Yeah, well, that's...
Soon. It's going to happen soon. Mm-hmm. You know, both City Hall and Captains of Industry, they're, you know...
And that feels really good. It really
it's
does.
It's become easier now, too, now with things like Kickstarter, you know,
right.
and crowdsourcing to not have to. Because I know that I made a prototype of a game, I don't even know if I told you about this, maybe like 6 years ago?
Okay.
Just on a whim. I was like, I'd come to Gen Con, and I was like, I'm going to design a card game. And I made a prototype, and I played with a few people, and then I was like, the game's okay, but gosh, how do I get this published, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had no idea. I mean, obviously, you've been publishing stuff for a long time, but, you know, Max, I mean, since it's not video, I was really, and usually when I say you, I refer to you, Rob.
Yeah, right.
So, but, you know, at that point, it was just kind of daunting, and then, you know, now I look at things like Kickstarter, and I think, oh, wow, like, I, even if it's on a smaller scale, have the ability on my own to do that, you know what I mean?
It is a lot of work after that, even.
Well, of course.
The whole production
course, yeah.
thing and artists
right.
and
But it's something that you can do, you know what I mean? You have you can hire an artist, you can, you know, you can figure out who's going to distribute. It's not that initial, I need this game company to sign on and take my game, you know?
Yeah,
that's
it is getting easier with crowdsourcing and with crowdfunding, and also there's the back end, the logistics end is picking up as well.
Well, yeah, because when you get that crowdfunding happening more, then
right.
you're going to get the things to support that
right.
because hey, we can make more money because more people are making games.
Yeah, right. Doug Eck, our designer at Tammany Hall, was about to kill me when I dropped a bunch of games off at his house and said, "Your name's on the box. You ship them out one at a time." So yeah, he said, "We're not gonna do this again. We're gonna put the price point up high enough so we can get somebody else to do this."
Yeah.
So they get a little tired of seeing him at the post office.
Well, and I feel like for your first game, like I'll suffer through it, assuming I finish a game and get it funded.
Right. But
you're
right. It is possible to do it yourself. But this 8 years of failure, though, I'm not gonna let you off of that. it's not failure. It's Martin Wallace once told me that no game design is wasted. So and it's. It's a corny thing, but, you know, it's easy to say because, you know, we've got a couple of games out there, but that it's the journey more than the destination. Now,
absolutely.
You certainly want to get to that destination because that's validation. That's outside validation
sure.
that you're not just doing vanity publishing or whatever. So good reviews really, really keep you going and keep you thinking, okay, it's not just me thinking this is a good idea. But yeah, it's definitely the journey, but and you're gonna get there, and it'll be a great moment, and it won't be enough. It is never enough. My pastor keeps telling us it's never enough.
Oh, I've got a notebook with two full pages of things to choose from my next one.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that's rough about the podcast is
yeah.
Every, you know, we publish a show every week, so 1 week Rob pitches a game, the next week I pitch a game, and you just keep falling in love with these new ideas that you're pitching, you know,
yeah.
knowing that, like, I can't make all these into games, you
yeah.
know, ever, and there's too many, but, you know, it's tough when you can say, all right, I've made this prototype, I want to make this game, here's the next two I think I want to make
yeah.
after that, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the question, I guess, which one of your games is your favorite? It's like the one I'm working on now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
and
then,
for us, it's the one I'm pitching this week.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Right.
The worst is when you have something, it's on your list, you're going to get to it soon, and then a game comes out that scoops the idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that hurts.
Yeah. You guys have both had that.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
That hurts.
Ouch.
And even we, you know...
But,
we talk,
but it tells you great minds think alike. And I mean, while
yeah.
while it's a really depressing moment.
It's a validation,
like, okay, I'm not
idea.
An idiot.
Yeah.
Right. It was a good idea. It's just they were faster than it.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, that's, you know, that's tough. We've talked about that a bit, where a couple game ideas we've had, like, you do further research, and it's like, oh, wow, there's this game, and there's this game, and that's basically, you know, we talked about that with one of the games I pitched, where there were some other games on the Unpub list that kind of sound like that game. You know, and we said when you sit down and play them, they're probably completely different. But that doesn't matter, because when you see the box and you read the little flavor text in the back, guess what? It sounds like the same game. And that means that if I have the other game, why would I buy this game? If Rio Grande made one, right? And then, like, some smaller company did, they're probably going to buy the Rio Grande game because it's more popular and it's out there.
Ironically, you're talking about Tammany Hall. When that reprint was announced this year, I did a facepalm.
No.
Because even though mechanically my City Hall is nothing like Tammany Hall, you can see how the theme just made me sweat a little.
Which made it interesting, because Doug's original concept was more in the weeds, like you're going, and then he switched his ideas around to be more of this sort of
area
macro
control.
View.
So it could have been worse.
Yeah. So it's really, because you talk about political influence in one way in City Hall, where Doug uses it in another way,
right,
in Tammany Hall. And so it's really interesting how, if I'm catching on to what City Hall is, it sounds good. You want to be in the surveyor's office next turn, but for a couple of terms, and then you want to be in the treasurer's office for a turn or two. You want to have control of these different offices at different times to suit your plans.
Right.
As you
and for
go.
Me, for me, the political influence is a currency that you spend
to get where you want to get the office you want to be, so that
right.
you can accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a currency you spend to get the power to do what you want to do, which is a really nice element. I think it's going to be, Doug's going to love that game.
But yeah,
if you can hook me up with him, I'd love to find out what he thinks.
He'll be here Saturday.
Okay, cool.
So we'll thrill him. You gotta be
I'll come by the booth and you can introduce us.
Yeah, well, if he's there. it's his day off, so who knows. These game designers, they're a flighty bunch.
Happens. Yeah. But I that's a valid point, though. You mean Tammany Hall, City Hall, right? I mean, people... You know, you're afraid of the people thinking of the same thing. So yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So remember, it's you know, I was talking about having two pages of ideas. It's not the idea; it's the execution.
Right. Yeah. Well, how many games on Rome and how many games on Medieval Training?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it is the execution. It is nice if it's a theme that hasn't been, you know, beat to death. And,
right.
And
right.
Yeah. It looks.
Because how many zombie games are there out there?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if I played
zombie
into a zombie.
Because right. the game I was referring to was a zombie defense game.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the thing is, you know, when a zombie game goes up against a non-zombie game and bites it, now you have two zombie games.
It's true. So they spread.
That is an
excellent
point.
Right.
Well, yeah. And for people that are fans of zombie games.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always say that in sheepdogs, the sheep can be undead sheep. That's fine.
Just pretend.
They're just undead
draw
sheep.
Little stitches
draw
on
little stitches on
them.
I think the next great idea is someone's going to make a game, where a zombie game, where each zombie represents a different zombie game. So if that zombie gets you, you have to play that zombie game to figure out what happens.
It's a zombie metagame.
Yes. Yeah.
The longest game ever.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's cool. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. Well, we're about out of time here. Now, this show we're gonna post on Sunday, of course, after the show is over. So, if anybody's listening to the show down the road after Gen Con, what is the best way they can get a hold of you guys and check out your stuff?
Facebook. We're on Facebook. That's a good spot to go.
Okay.
And are you Stratamax Games on Facebook?
Stratamax Games Facebook page.
Stratamax.
That's it.
Okay. Stratamax Games. And Michael?
Visible, if you go to visiblehandgames.com, there will be links to our social media pages in the upper right, as well as my personal blog about game design, gamedesignerwannabe.com.
Okay.
Very nice.
Right.
And if you're interested in City Hall specifically, I'm going to be at a few more conventions this year, including probably Rincon in Arizona, Metatopia in New Jersey, and BGGCon.
Wow, you got a lot of travel.
Yeah.
Where are you located at home?
New York City.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. So you really travel a lot.
Yeah, I just got finished doing DexCon, WC, and now GenCon, so it's a busy year.
I missed WC this year. I'm disappointed.
And Max, you said you're actually from Indianapolis.
From Indianapolis. I hope to get to Buckeye Game Fest in about a month.
Oh, sure, okay.
And then we'll be at Essen in Germany.
Oh, yeah, that's so gotta be exciting.
That's my annual trip of indulgence. but it's really good. Yeah, it's a really good time, and you know, some of my best friends are across the pond now, so
yeah.
After years of going there. So it's a great experience. It is a pilgrimage every gamer should make at least once.
Someday.
Just to see. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks again, guys. We really appreciate you hanging out with us tonight, and all the best for your weekends here at Gen Con. I hope you have a good time. I hope you have a lot of success, and I hope we can meet up with you a little later and play your games.
That'd be great. Yeah, it was great meeting you guys.
Awesome. You guys too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, take it easy. And thank you, listeners, for hanging out with us here for an hour. As always, you can check us out at buildingthegamepodcast.com or...
we're on Twitter at podcastbtg.
And our email address is buildingthegamepodcast. Did I get that right?
At buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com.
I can never remember that. Okay, thanks again. Everybody have a good night, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
There's a tangle in my cord.
Sure is.
It's pretty bad, actually.
A really bad tangle.